content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Well, hello there. This is Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting our podcast for over 10 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. And now it's time to crack open the cover on a brand new issue of Our State magazine, celebrating North Carolina in May of 2021. Cover says birds, and there is a absolutely stunning picture of a hummingbird in mid-flight. Now, that's really hard to capture. You've got to have a really fast lens. The sky is washed out behind the bird. There's a big pink flower on the right-hand side that it is either about to visit or has just visited. Wings are outstretched behind him. I believe this is called a ruby-throated hummingbird. It is a ruby color all the way from the long beak down about, well, the birds are pretty small, so I would say half an inch, if you will, below the top of the head, and then it turns to white, and then we have a greenish-yellow color going into the wings, which are sort of a grayish color. And beside it, there's a little arrow that points to it. It says, 16 feathered friends every North Carolinian should see, including this ruby-throated hummingbird. And there are lots of other things. The special this month is a tribute to North Carolina nurses, which I appreciate because my daughter is a nurse at Rex Hospital, and my daughter-in-law is a nurse practitioner in the Atlanta area. So we'll definitely have to honor them by reading that. And I'm also going to try to get to the special on they always do a special on some town, at least one of them. And this month it's on Southport, and I know several people who live in Southport, and I've been there myself once, so I would like a refresher, and I'll bring you along with me. But we're going to start, as we always do, with the From Elizabeth column by Elizabeth Hudson, editor-in-chief. You make my heart sing. That sounds like the name of a song or a leading line from a rock and roll song from many years ago. You make my heart sing. It's the first sound I hear in the morning, before the coffee maker clicks on and steam spatters against the hot burner, before a squirrel patters across the roof, the sharp, high, clear-whistled voice of an American robin perched somewhere outside my window just before sunrise. He's there every day, his sweet song rising with the first light, his lilt nudging me awake, his bright, fluffy notes. No, it's actually, it says fluty, not fluffy. Fluty notes, lifting my heart. By the time I'm outside for my morning walk, the sky has lightened, and the robins have been joined by wrens, Carolina chickadees, and white-throated sparrows. These tiny birds trilling with their whole hearts and filling the morning with a symphony of sound, a full choral concert, nature's ode to joy. I've heard these songs all my life. Familiar notes that never seem to change. On spring weekends, before my grandmother called me in for lunch, uprooting me from the hammock in her backyard, I'd listen to the bluebirds that were drawn to her garden for the flowering dogwood trees and for the bird baths that she always kept filled. On quiet summer evenings, just before dusk, we'd watch the soothing coo of a mourning dove. In later years, when I'd helped her walk to Ashboro Friends meetings for her Sunday service, we'd stop often so that she could catch her breath. Holding on to my shoulder for steadiness, she'd look up, hopeful, her eyes scanning the treetops, the skies. Or maybe beyond, I was never sure. Then we'd hear it, the pew, pew of a northern cardinal perched on a branch of the church's magnolia tree. He sang every Sunday as if he'd been waiting there for an audience. My grandmother loved hymns, and it's only now when I hear the songs of her beloved birds that I recall the lines she loved best. Each little flower that opens, each little bird that sings, from all things bright and beautiful. And this one, when through the woods and forest glades I wander, and heard the birds sing sweetly in the trees, from how great thou art. Then sings my soul indeed. I think of the birds that converged on my parents' backyard, goldfinches and red-bellied woodpeckers and brown-headed nuthatches, attracted to the feeders full of sunflower seeds, millet, and peanuts, enticed by the nesting houses and roosting boxes that my dad built. I remember how he stood at the kitchen window in the mornings, stirring sugar into his coffee and watching a flock of birds flitting outside, proud to have created such a safe and hospitable place, such a welcoming environment. No matter where I go in North Carolina, a walk through a longleaf forest in southern pines, or a rose garden in Wilson, a trek along a trail at Grandfather Mountain, or a visit to Fort Fisher, the birds are always there, too, singing, calling, cooing, peeping, chirping, their voices perennial, perpetual, a ceaseless reminder that I, too, am home. Well, those of you who are with me regularly are waiting for the sound of music, because that's when I push the button, but it turns out that the photo essay this month is mostly words, like one picture and then a lot of words about each one, so I'm going to dispense with the usual music for the background of my ad hoc description, and I'm going to read you a bird's eye view of North Carolina, written by Tom Earnhardt. From wading shorebirds to mountain-dwelling warblers, our avian neighbors have a lot to teach us about the places we call home. A naturalist's list of 16 must-see birds tell the story of our state in feathers and flight paths. Double-page spread here, the title information, and what I just read on the left-hand side, silhouette of a bird on the right-hand side, and the text reads, Pea Island National Wildlife Refuge is a popular place for birders year-round, and especially in the fall and winter when black ducks and other migratory species arrive on the outer banks. So this doesn't tell us what we're looking at, but it does look like a duck. I guess it's referring to the black duck they mentioned there, and it's in silhouette, so yes, it's a black duck. Everything else in the picture is orange. It must be something about the way the photographer took the picture, but the sky and the water is all orange. The duck has just taken off. There is a big fountain of water that has come up from where the duck has left the surface. There are droplets all over the place caught by the sunlight. A very pretty picture. Overleaf, the picture, which I'll describe in a moment, is of hundreds of birds. They seem to be all headed to the right. No, here's somebody who doesn't understand and is headed to the left. But most of them are headed to the right, and a lot of them are still in the water. It looks like a migratory flock. And what does the caption say? Pea Island National Wildlife Refuge was established in part to protect the migratory birds that overwinter on Hatteras Island, including thousands of redhead and pintail ducks, which is what I can assume we see here. We see hundreds of the thousands that are there. We see a little bit of out-of-focus reeds in the background sticking out of the water in one place and kind of little islands of them, of grass in a very watery area. And, of course, where the birds are taking off, there's a big splash coming out of the water, and the others are in the air, and their wings are in all sorts of various positions as they fly away. Birds have long played a role in helping humans understand the world around us. In ancient Rome, augury, A-U-G-U-R-Y, was the practice of interpreting omens from the observed behavior of birds. Bird patterns and movements were believed to aid humans in understanding the will of the gods before making personal decisions or determinations affecting the state. Although there is no widespread practice of augury in the 21st century, we still have a lot to learn from birds. Knowledge of the numbers, species, and health of our avian neighbors is integral to understanding our past. And if we're smart, birds can help guide us to a more sustainable future. In the 1850s, the display of birds became an obsession in Victorian England. In both public institutions and private homes, mounted birds from all over the world could be seen in lifelike displays under glass domes. In 1884, the taxidermy craze officially arrived in North Carolina when the State Department of Agriculture commissioned an Englishman, Herbert H. Brimley, to prepare mounted waterfowl and fish for the North Carolina Exposition. That exhibit and other taxidermy at work and collections prepared by Brimley and his younger brother, Clement, would mark the beginning of one of America's great museums, what is now the North Carolina Museum of Natural Sciences. Today, around 20,000 bird specimens in the museum's research collection help tell the avian story of North Carolina. Brimley was a first-rate naturalist who traveled extensively around the state in the late 1800s and early 1900s. He left us not only remarkable specimens, but also a trove of photographs. Brimley's collections have provided benchmarks for the planners and scholars to evaluate change over time. They can help us understand the effects of forestry practices, agricultural operations, urban development, and hunting. More important, perhaps, the collections highlight the unique biological, topographical, and climate diversity found in our state. Even birds from North Carolina's past that are sadly now extinct have plenty to teach us. John Lawson, who lived in Bath in the early 1700s, wrote about our only parrot, the Carolina parakeet. They are mischievous to orchards. They are often taken alive and will become familiar and tame in 2 days. More than a century later, John James Audubon included this parrot in the Birds of America, writing, "The parakeets are destroyed in great numbers, for whilst busily engaged in plucking off the fruits or tearing the grain from the stacks, the husbandman approaches them with perfect ease and commits great slaughter among them." The last known Carolina parakeet died in the Cincinnati Zoo in 1918. Clearly, our stewardship of the species, along with passenger pigeons, ivory-billed woodpeckers, and others, has been woefully inadequate. These birds, which will never take flight again, should be constant reminders of the vigilance required to maintain ecosystems for living things. We are fortunate in North Carolina that once imperiled species like the bald eagle have seen their numbers rebound in recent decades. At the same time, far too many birds, bobwhite quail, eastern whippoorwills, the variety of warblers, and numerous shorebills have declined in number for all too familiar reasons, habitat destruction, and the continued indiscriminate use of pesticides. The National Audubon Society declared in 2019 that in the past 50 years, we have lost 1 in 4 birds in North America alone. Other organizations estimate the magnitude of avian decline even larger. Still, places in the temperate latitudes offer more opportunity to study and celebrate birds than North Carolina. Today, more than 450 species can be found within our borders, including the vast majority of birds found on the east coast of North America. Many are permanent residents, while others use our state as their summer or winter home. Being about equidistant between Florida and Canada, North Carolina is a seasonal pass-through zone for millions of birds heading to points north or south. In short, if you're a birder, there's no better place in eastern America than the old North State. I don't know anyone who believes an augury is practiced by the ancient Romans, nor am I aware of individuals who can interpret omens from the size and shape of bird flocks. I'm beginning to think, however, that the Romans may have been on to something. The birds around us, from the tropics to the Arctic Circle, continue to be our canaries in the coal mine as they alert us to changes in the air, on the water, and in myriad living ecosystems. Now, I'm going to take a little break here from the text to tell you about the picture on the bottom half of these two pages. The caption says, "Early morning finds geese on the water and in the air at Lake Matamuskeet National Wildlife Refuge in eastern North Carolina." I have been there myself, and it is it's interesting in that it's divided in two by a highway, or a roadway, I should say, and it's very, very shallow, like 2 feet deep or something. So if you're going to take a boat in there, it had better not have a large draft to it. What we have here is a presumably dead tree out in the water by itself. The shadow is such that the water, with a slight ripple on it, is giving us a shadowy image with a ripple and blur for in front of us as the tree faces us, and then it goes up in the air from there. Still has a lot of branches on it. There are what look like some geese and some ducks in the water off to the right side, and like a pink band in the water just due to the light. And then we see a shoreline far in the distance. There is an inset box on the page. It says, "North Carolina's naturalist Tom Earnhardt. If, as Tennyson wrote, we truly are a part of all that we have met, each of Tom Earnhardt's cells must be imbued with speckled trout, mayflies, wild orchids, pine, savannas, stones, and mountains known best throughout geologic time." Earnhardt devotes his life to acquainting himself with North Carolina's natural abundance so that he may introduce this wild world to us. His world as a conservationist is like a prism, shining light in many directions. In addition to working as an attorney, photographer, and producer and writer of the PBS series Exploring North Carolina, he is the author of 3 books, including Crossroads of the Natural World. For decades, Earnhardt has helped North Carolinians meet and treasure the bounty of their state. So now I'm going to continue to the text a little bit more here, and then we'll flip the page and see what's there. "In the coming pages, you'll find 16 species, plus a supporting cast of plumed characters that I have selected as defining birds of our state. These birds can all be found in North Carolina by those willing to travel. They represent different categories: migratory waterfowl, raptors, shorebirds, neotropical songbirds, woodpeckers, and game birds, and different regions of our state from mountains to coast. All of them have much to tell us about the health of North Carolina ecosystems and the world beyond our borders." Defining birds, the must-see list of North Carolina's winged residents. Number one, I think there's 9 of them. We'll see. Number one, tundra swan. If you've ever driven through northeastern North Carolina during the winter, you may have seen a string or a V of large, long-necked birds silhouetted against the sky. Chances are you're looking at one of North America's most spectacular birds, the tundra swan. They raise their young and spend their summers near the Arctic Circle on the coastlines of North Canada and Alaska. Then, during the course of their long lives, averaging 10 years or more, they make an annual pilgrimage of some 3,500 miles to North Carolina, relaxing and fattening up during the winter months for their return trip to the Arctic. To carry their weight of 10 to 20 pounds, these swans have wingspans of approximately 5.5 feet. The 75,000 swans stopping over North Carolina make up the vast majority of wintering tundra swans on the East Coast. Best of all, they can be seen alongside snow geese, a variety of ducks, and even sandhill cranes. Where to see them? Pocosin Lakes and Matamuskeet National Wildlife Refuge. That's in Hyde County, by the way. When? Mid-November to mid-March. Caption on the double page picture. Every winter, thousands of tundra swans and other migratory waterfowl visit Pungo Lake at Pocosin National Wildlife Refuge, which is kind of funny. I don't know exactly where Pocosin is, but Pungo River runs alongside Hyde and Beaufort counties coming in from the Pamlico Sound. Anyway, we have two swans here flying over a very gray background. Again, perhaps something that the photographer has done here to fade out the background. There's just a wisp of water at the bottom, and it's kind of a brownish tone leading to ivory. So we're seeing little stringy pieces of water, if you will, that the swan's wings are slightly reflected in, but the rest of the water is just all grayed out, as is the background. Both swans have their wide wingspans way out to the sides. We're seeing one that has its wings raised up, and we see one of those wings from the top and the other one the bottom. And so right at the very end, we can see that the feathers are splayed out. It's like three fingers that are out on the front side. I guess it has something to do with the aerodynamics. And then all the rest of the feathers are together. The swan's legs are tucked up tightly behind it, and its dark black feet are tucked right underneath its tail. Everything else is white except for the area around the eyes and the beak of the swan. The other swan, who's leading, has its mouth open, so it is saying something, expressing an opinion, perhaps, about the weather, or whether its mate is keeping up with it or not. I really don't know. But it looks basically the same, but its wings are on the downswing there, so they are not synchronized. However, I do note that on the right-hand wing, those leading feathers are spread out also. So I don't know whether that's an aerodynamic thing that they're doing, or the wind is just blowing the feathers apart at that point. So that was the tundra swan. Number two that you should know is black skimmer. During summer months at Cape Lookout, I have often seen tuxedoed black and white birds with long toucan-like orange and black bills. They skim the surface of Barden Inlet with their longer lower mandibles slicing through the water. When they make contact with prey, their heads bend down as their shorter upper mandibles slam shut. Unlike terns, with which they are often confused, black skimmers do not feed by sight, but by touch. Because of the skimmers frequently feed in the early morning and late evening, or at night when waters are calm. Like terns and oyster catchers, skimmers nest on sandy beaches, but they've lost much of their habitat to development and storms. At present, there are thought to be fewer than 325 breeding pairs in North Carolina each summer. Although some winter over from Cape Lookout south, many fly south for the winter. Where can you see them? Cape Lookout, Hammocks Beach State Park, and the south end of Wrightsville Beach. When? Well, nesting season is late April through June. Large migratory flocks can also be seen near inlets from late August to October. A couple of pictures here. The one of the birds themselves show both of them skimming. Remember, they're called black skimmers. Skimming over the water, and their beaks are open. The lower beak is longer, and it is just skimming in the water, and it is kicking up a spray like a water skier's ski would do along. So there's a line running through the water behind each one of them. Their wings are up, and they are hoping something will come into that mouth of theirs. The other picture says bird stewards organized by Audubon North Carolina post signs adorned with art by local fifth graders to help protect black skimmers and other shorebirds nesting on busy Wrightsville Beach. And they have one of those little signs here, obviously written by a child, but it's a nice picture of the bird, but it says help the sh, and then there's the bird, O-R-E, shore birds, and then something about Audubon at the base. We are almost running out of time, but let's hit number three, the ruby-throated hummingbird. The ruby-throated hummingbird is our most diminutive summer visitor. Adult birds tip the scale at 1/10 to 2/10 of an ounce, although other species of vagrant hummingbirds are found from time to time in North Carolina. The ruby throat is the only breeding hummingbird. Starting at lower elevations, in late March or early April, hummers can be seen until late September across our state. With a normal cruising speed of 25 miles an hour and dives of 50 miles an hour, ruby throats are blazingly fast. Their wings beat, where wing beats average between 50 and 60 beats per second and can reach as high as 200 beats per second during courtship. With a lifespan of 3 to 5 years, many of these miraculous creatures will fly across the Gulf of Mexico multiple times during their lives, traveling between their Tar Heel nesting home and their wintering grounds in Central America. When to see them? They are drawn to hummingbird feeders statewide, as well as deep-throated wildflowers like cardinal flower and coral honeysuckle. You can see them from late March through early October. And there's a picture here of a hummingbird. It's very brown. This is, they said ruby-throated, but I think it's the male that's the ruby-throated. And the female doesn't get that. The female gets a little bit of a speckled brown throat. Her beak is well inside this red flower. Her wings are caught by the camera back on one of those really fast beats that it's doing. It's little clawed feet are curled up under its body, and then there's an inset picture of the male with its bright red throat. A picture on the left side says, look for ruby-throated hummingbirds foraging on cardinal flowers and other blooms across the state. They're especially plentiful in historic Yates Mill County Park in Raleigh, and that, of course, is exactly what we have a picture here, the beautiful Yates Mill. Old three-story building, long sloping roof coming down to a two-storied section, mostly horizontal, very weathered boards, and then some vertical ones on the two-story one, built up on stones and a small wheel there, and the dam pouring water. Very picturesque. Well, at number 3 out of 9 or so, we have run out of time for today's episode of Our State Magazine. A lot of text to read today. Hope you enjoyed it, and you'll be back to listen next time for number 4 through whatever. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. The content of this magazine, comment of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Our State Magazine, next line, is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Questions, comments, call the studios 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.